Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones. Now here's Leslie.
Well, it's you too. It's you too, Clinton. No, it's you too. I thought we were going to do the old school. You can't do the old school?
You won't let me play you two.
Ho, ho, ho. So funny.
Dumb joke number one. Bing.
Yeah, I think that's something that you're going to win all by yourself, baby. I'm not playing.
I'm ready for people to make the homegrown bingo card. That's what I want. I think Clinton makes a dumb joke should be on one of the squares.
It should.
For the homegrown bingo card.
It should. And one of the other ones should be how loud David can get, you know, decibels.
Too loud. David gets too loud at the beginning. Another one, a homegrown bingo card.
Oh my goodness. It is Sunday morning. It is Mother's Day. So if you haven't already, call yo mama. What's wrong with you?
Exactly what would you like me to call my mama?
I would like you to call her the beautiful human being that gave you life and thank her.
You obviously don't know my mama.
You know what? Whatever your relationship is now, you wouldn't be here without her. So at least thank her for that.
I will never forgive her for that.
Oh my Lord. There's so much therapy that needs to go on in this room right now. I just want y'all to know I've already called my mother. She was on her way to church. And I had a momentous moment today because I got to tell my daughter Happy Mother's Day.
Oh.
Which is surreal on so many levels. You know, you never, I literally went to send the text message because, you know, she's 23, so she doesn't like actually talk on the phone. Everything is a text message. But I went to send the text message and I'm like, oh, wow, I shouldn't have to be doing this. Why am I doing this? She should not have, like, birthed anything. What is this?
Yeah, what is this whole thing about phones? And, like, how is this next generation supposed to take over and clean up all of the mess that the previous three generations have done, but they can't bring themselves to talk on the phone?
Yeah, they can't talk to each other at
like,
all.
What?
At all. It's quite disturbing. Uh-oh, AD's making that face.
Texting away the apocalypse.
I'm going to keep that one to myself.
Uh-oh. No. This is not the place where you keep it to yourself.
Happy Mother's Day.
All right. Well, that's a nice segue. If you haven't guessed, one of our guests this morning, Professor A.D. Carson, and John Conover, who's sitting very quietly over there in the corner.
Thinking of my mother.
Okay, good. Good. That's a good use of your time. they are here to talk about the Royale that opens May 17th at Live Arts. AD was the sound designer and John is the dramaturg.
And full disclosure, Leslie is the director.
I was about to say that. Thank you, Clinton. Yes, Clinton, hovering over my shoulder. So AD, let's start with you. And I'll let you tell the story about how you got involved with the show.
Okay. Well, I think that you asked me about this a long time ago. And I don't know. There's so many things happening, or there are always so many things happening. And so we had a conversation about it. And I don't know. I thought that it was an interesting prospect, but I'm always reluctant to take on new projects because, you know, there's so much to do. But then as we moved forward, it seemed to be more likely. I think because of the nature of the piece, the play, the place that it or where it takes place, and then the proximity of where it takes place to where I imagine my work taking place. And so I wrote this album about, wow, 2 years ago. Today is 2 days after the second anniversary of me graduating from Clemson.
Yep.
This doctoral program in rhetorics, communication, and information design. And the album that I wrote for my dissertation, it's called Owning My Masters, The Rhetorics of Rhymes and Revolutions. And part of that is kind of imagined in the underground space where Ralph Ellison's narrator from Invisible Man is hiding out, where he imagines himself as a thinker tinker, and he's outfitted the place with 1,369 light bulbs that he's stealing from the monopolated power company. And he's imagining playing five phonographs of Louis Armstrong and talking about what brought him to that place. But right after that prologue, then you get the first chapter of the book in which that character and several other people are made to participate in this fight that is called the Battle Royale. And so it makes perfect sense that the music that I'm imagining creating in a space like Ellison's sort of underground hideout,
right,
should be the music that would accompany the play that is related, you know, in name, but in nature as well, to this aspect of this story, this fight. In that prologue, they talk about carrying on a fight without their knowing it. They is like the sleepwalkers. So this seems to me a way also to carry on that fight sonically, to really try to make sure that the resonances are played up between that music, what I think that the character in that book calls the invisible music of my isolation, and you know, myself, the ways that I see the way that that fight might go on, but ways that I've also tried to carry on that fight even before I realized that that was the fight that I was carrying on. And then the future of that fight, not necessarily having to narrate a new experience, but to use the music to sort of build a soundtrack for other experiences. So you have these things that exist in the past, both a text and music, that come together and create, you know, a new thing.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, the Royale is a fictional retelling of Jack Johnson's heavyweight title fight to become the heavyweight champion of the world. And it takes place at a time in our history where no black man had ever done that. So, John, talk a little bit about, as dramaturg, what your experience was combing through this history and attaching it to the play. Even though the play is fictional, it's based on a real person. So what was your experience doing that?
I've been very fortunate to do this. I read over the season offerings, and this was the only one I really wanted to be a part of, partly because of the director and the yet unknown cast. I've been intrigued. I'm a sports fan. I knew of Jack Johnson. I knew of Jim Crow. I knew they were related, but you really got to get into the history, and that comes in many ways. There's academic history, and there's newspaper history, and there's enormous amount of photographic history of this period and Jack Johnson, and it really is extraordinary. Jack Johnson, and the dramaturg is not really out there to give opinions about stuff. It's to help the people in the play understand the background. But on a radio show, I can say Jack Johnson was a great historical figure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely a great historical figure. Now, parse that out. Was he a great man? Yes, in many ways. Was he a flawed man? In many ways. He himself said, I have never made a mistake in the ring. Outside, I've made a lot. but as a historical figure, he is in the highest level if you're talking about struggle for black Americans. and stands out as really, I mean, he was the Muhammad Ali of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Muhammad Ali himself recognized that over and over and over again. He was hated by the white public, and he said, bring it on. In fact, to bring it on, I'll give you a little more red meat. And he did this in many ways, with his voice, with his dress. I mean, he had a man full-time just taking care of his suits.
Yep.
And you say, well, that sounds sort of silly or, you know, innocuous, but the idea of a black man looking good, looking better than anybody else, was offensive. It was just like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know?
And give the actual time frame that we're dealing with so people know.
Oh, yes, yes. The fight against the man, and the real man's name was Jim Jeffries, was July 4th, 1910. It was supposed to be in San Francisco. The mayor of San Francisco said, we can't do this. It's just too volatile. The governor of Nevada said, bring it on. Come to Reno, where they fought under the blazing sun for 16 rounds, when Jack Johnson literally knocked Jim Jeffries out of the ring between the ropes. And people had to pick him up and force him back in. Jeffries had been the world heavyweight champion and retired undefeated.
Mm.
And so he had not boxed in 5 or 6 years. Technically, Jack Johnson already was the world's heavyweight champion because he beat some bum who had succeeded to the title after some kind of half-ass elimination.
Right.
And he did that in Australia. But nobody, until you beat the undefeated heavyweight champion, the white heavyweight champion, he wasn't that. One of the extraordinary phrases of the time.
And John, yes. As I remember, part of the reason for that is that people knew, correct me if I'm wrong, people knew and suspected at the time that Jack Johnson was good enough to beat Jeffries, and they were trying to keep that from happening.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was many things at play. There was a lot of money to be earned. You know, people didn't want him being ratified as a black champion, but people wanted to bet. They wanted to see it. They wanted the spectacle. They wanted to write about it. They hoped that, I mean, they couldn't believe that, you know, a white guy of his size and history, if he really put his mind to it, wouldn't beat the hell out of the black man.
Yeah.
And so, there was just a lot going on. Now, Clinton made me lose my train of thought.
Oh,
now,
what
kind of host is that? you may have seen Jack Johnson. He was The Great White Hope was a 1960s play,
yes.
And then a movie with James Earl.
Yeah, right. Retelling the same story, yeah.
Retelling the same story in a very literally correct chronological manner. It wasn't just opinion. But the phrase, and this just occurred to me yesterday, the Great White Hope is so totally offensive. I mean, if you talk now, today, in 2019, about the Great Black Hope, I mean, it would be, like, dumb, you know. People thought black is beautiful was, like, too aggressive. They think Black Lives Matter is too aggressive. And to say the Great White Hope by a majority race who had everything is also is kind of an epitome of white privilege. You know, it was partly there to sell tickets, but people believed it. And why they were felt so down that they needed a hope is an interesting question. I mean, if you have 99...
That's a question that we haven't answered yet today.
If you have 99% of everything, you know, you really hope to get 1% more.
Yeah, right. They didn't realize it's not pie.
So it's fantastic, and the play is really great. And if I can put a plug in for AD, when you do a play, the tradition is you actually have to honor the words and do them, say them, even if you think you can improve it.
Yeah.
But there's no music in the script. And so this is original to this play in Charlottesville, Virginia, at Live Arts. And if I can translate May 17, which Leslie said it opens, that's this Friday.
Yep.
And it's going to play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, until June 8th. So come on down. It's in the smaller space, so there's tickets are going fast, and some nights are sold out already.
Oh, yeah, every Saturday night is already sold out, I think.
Right. Call 977-4177. Ask for Daryl. You'll be happy you did.
We got to do a drop. We'll be right back here on Homegrown.
This is Jamal Milner, and you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
17 minutes past the hour, and if you are just tuning in, where have you been? We have been waiting for you. You are in trouble, mister.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yes, this is the Black Mama Mother's Day. here on Homegrown, we are talking with A.D. Carson and John Conover, the sound designer and dramaturg, respectively, for the Royale at Live Arts, opening May 17th, running through June 8th. So, as a director, let me just say, I made the decision quite early that there was definitely going to be music for this play. And because of the way that the play was structured, with moments in the play being accentuated by claps and stomps and oohs and ahs from the ensemble, as soon as I read the play, to me, that spoke of a step show. Which led me to hip hop, which is why I went to AD, because I was like, yes, I could definitely pull, you know, the hip hop that I know and create this. But why would I when I have someone who can literally create music for this show? So AD, talk a little bit about, the pieces that you chose and what you chose to accentuate certain moments.
All right. So I thought, I think that there's always sort of the, well, you might call it like multivocal, but like, it's not just vocal. I mean, I remember us having a conversation about, trying to something that would replicate or would represent the Jay's heartbeat.
Yes.
And there's this piece that that I had that I wrote with a producer friend who goes by the name Truth. And I remember this I mean, what I love so much about the music was that it was really, it was more just this sort of this pounding drum, more than anything else, that kind of sounded like a heartbeat. And in the name of the song is Truth on the Beat. And so that was really where we started. And that song is about history, or the way that histories get written, and who we are taught to honor through those histories. And so it makes sense to call the song Truth on the Beat, because yeah, the song is about naming him as a person who brings us this particular piece of, you know, like historical literary engagement.
Yeah.
And so to have that be sort of the backbone of the piece, to be the heartbeat of the piece, is where we started. And then, you know, the Impeach the President breakbeat is in there. The reason that that's there is, well, again, because Impeach the President.
Full stop. Let's just leave that there.
Yeah.
Because whenever you can. Just yeah. whenever you can.
Yeah. That. Yes. So for sure, Impeach the President. And also that the breakbeat is so recognizable,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, I recall one time I have this T-shirt that says Impeach the President. And I had some pictures taken for another, like at an event or something. And I remember sending this out to a university that invited me for some hip hop related event. And the the public relations people, they blacked my shirt out.
No.
And sent me the poster, and they said, is this cool? And I'm like,
no.
What happened to my shirt? Because I didn't wear that. I know because I have the picture.
Right.
And they're like, oh, yeah, well, we thought that that would be too offensive. You know, like, no political statements on our posters. And I'm like, my face is on your poster.
It's a political statement.
That's a political statement.
Right.
But whatever. Also, it's a breakbeat.
Right.
You know, you if you heard it, you would know it.
Yeah.
So, well, this is our first lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this one is free because it's happening via email. anyhow. I think that it was kind of an interesting way to play that up, because I don't know that the audience is going to know that they're hearing impeach the president by name.
Right.
But they will hear that several times.
Yep.
And then, you know, other pieces like Poser is kind of like this introspective, I guess is extrospective a word? This sort of like inside outside look at how relationships are formed over time, or the ways that we might have how like tension in those relationships might manifest. And then, there are. Let's see, Until It's Gone. I just love the sample from that. Again, it's another story about growing up, like the nature of dopeness, the way that we see it, you know, like how we make something out of the thing that is given to us for ill.
Yes.
And then, of course, Elevator is in there, which is...
Elevator is my favorite.
Oh, word. Yeah.
Like, it is my favorite.
And that's also another one of these things, just kind of thinking about how, you know, like as you are ascending, you know, like... metaphorically, and I say this at the beginning, you know, like the elevator is supposed to be a metaphor, but I shouldn't have to explain that.
Right.
But as you're going through this, like what you ultimately find out about yourself and about people who are around you. And then Kill Whitey is there. I think that, you know, it's very clever use, I believe, by you of the of Kill Whitey in the text of the play.
Yep.
Because of the way that it is gifted. And then received and enacted with, you know, like by the ensemble. And then the last piece is Documented, which it takes a sample that's used from Dead Prez from their Let's Get Free album, but also the voice of Leslie McSpadden, who is Michael Brown's mother.
Yes.
As well as a sample from Aretha Franklin. And all of those things kind of come together in this culminating moment that I think, I hope is really powerful, or as powerful for audiences as it was for me. So it's the pieces.
Yeah.
Can I say a word about the aftermath of the play, of the fight?
Yeah.
Because I think it's relevant to the audience. So we said this was July 4th, 2010. There had been a huge buildup nationally in the newspaper.
1910,
I'm sorry. In the newspapers. I mean, the country is aware of this. Black people are anticipating it. White people are anticipating it. Jack Johnson wins. In the aftermath, in the next two or three days, a couple dozen people were killed. Hundreds were injured. It was the first incidence of physical unrest, clash between white and black over a national issue, really until the killing of Martin Luther King 57 years ago. There were clashes everywhere. Roanoke, Norfolk, where Columbus, Ohio, Pittsburgh. I mean, get the newspapers and look. They were everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and after he won, he was then subsequently arrested for kidnapping because he drove his then wife, who was white, over state lines.
The Mann Act was written.
Bring it was down written Jack Johnson. To get him. Yes.
Yeah. And well, he lived another until 1946 and had an interesting life. But the references in the play is what happens. What if you do this? If you go fight, what are the ramifications going to be?
Right.
You know, and I think that there's some, for me, really some kind of personal and. Sort of, it's not just personal, but it's like something to deliberate about in our social lives. As you think about operating in the world as it exists currently, I have a friend who's reminded me of advice that he heard from someone else, and that is to always consider how your success will be used against people who look like you.
Yes.
And that's something I think about constantly. You know, like, I can't be the exceptional rapper.
Yes.
Because if I'm the exceptional rapper, then every other regular rapper, and I, you know, use the air quotes, every other regular rapper is going to somehow be held to a different kind of standard.
Yes.
Primarily because of my, the exceptional nature of people's engagement with me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that.
And that is something that, that no matter what genre of music or of art or whatever you do in your life, if you have black skin, that that's a question that you always have to ask yourself.
Yeah, or just living, you know, like whether it's art or not, just kind of like making your way through the world, you find yourself in your success being used as a weapon to make sure that you are like one of one.
Yes.
In the areas where you are able to operate.
Yes.
You become the diversity of the place.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm so sorry, but that's our time.
Come on, we want more.
I know. I know. There's so much to talk about, but I will let everybody know that there is a series of podcasts, interviews coming out about the show. They're going to drop every day this week, a new episode. So check the website, the Facebook page will have links there for you. And one of those is an entire hour-long conversation with AD in depth about this music. So keep a lookout for
and
that.
And come see the show.
And get the mixtape.
And there's also a mixtape that AD made with the music from the show, which is on Bandcamp right now.
It is.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming and talking about this. Opens May 17th, runs through June 8th. Thank you so much.
Peace.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Clinton. And thank you for this show. It's a real asset to Charlottesville.
You heard it here first, and probably only here, and only here, we're an asset to Charlottesville. And let's talk about some artistic aspects of Charlottesville coming up this week. Last chance to see Guerrilla Theater Productions present a stripped-down version of The Glass Menagerie. I hear really great things about this show. Check it out. Last chance to see Shannon Arts present their musical review, Ring of Fire, the music of Johnny Cash in Stanton. Currently running from now until June 9th, the American Shakespeare Center's current traveling troupe returns from their Hand of Time tour to the Blackfriars in Stanton to perform the Antigone by Sophocles, 16 Winters or The Bear's Tale by Mary Elizabeth Hamilton, and the Comedy of Errors and The Winter's Tale, of course, by Shakespeare. Currently running right now, check out exhibits from these local artists. Nita Thompson and Tracy Landon display their paintings at New Dominion Workshop, Lou Henney at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. Various artists show encaustic works at Melting Point, contemporary encaustic works in the Sarah B. Smith Gallery of the McGuffey Arts Center. Kelly Oakes is displaying her careful figure work in Still at McGuffey. Local high schools have an exhibit at McGuffey. Michael Fitz and Megan Reed have Objectify, their joint exhibit of their photorealistic style of painting at Second Street Gallery. It's only going till the 17th. You've got just this week to see it. See it before it closes. Carrie Olivia shows dreamlike imagery created by manipulating photographs in Mayflowers at Top Knot Studios. Currently running from now until May 26th, God of Carnage, the funny and brutal Tony Award-winning play at the Cellar and Four County Players. Today, UVA Fralin Art Museum docent and former guest June Heinz guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fralin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour. Tomorrow, registration for June summer writing classes at the Writer House. Registration opens. So, you know, sign up for your writing classes in June. May 14th, the Fralin Art Museum offers Babes in Artland for adult caregivers of infants 18 months and younger. Bring your baby to join fellow parents for lively conversations about works of art. On the 14th, also UVA's Christopher Tillman reads from his new novel, Thomas and Beale in the Midi, at New Dominion Bookshop. May 15th, Fun for the Young with Amy Hunt at UVA's Fralin Art Museum. Arts-related story time led by Gordon Avenue Children's Librarian Amy Hunt. While museum docents encourage kids to engage with museum expositions. And guess what? This week you get a second shot at the Fralin Art Museum, June Heinz's guided Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour. That's on the 16th. And for your music options this week,
Eli Goldstein leads a jazz trio of his trumpet, a keyboard and a stand-up bass at 1 p.m. at the Batesville Market. Singer-songwriter extraordinaire Peyton Tochterman at Glasshouse Winery. Hey, Peyton, you need to come on the show again, dude. What's up? At 2 p.m., Patrick and Aaron Olwell and friends at 2:30 at Almirall Ciderworks. Today, Women's A Cappella Chamber Choir, Fire, performs at First Presbyterian Church at 3:30. On the 14th, Lewis Smith and friends at Fellini's. On the 15th, Gypsy Town at the Shebeen. Neil Goodlow leads an open mic night at Dirty Nelly's. On the 16th, Matt Keefe Duo at... Oh, sorry, Pat. It's early on Sunday. Sorry. Pat Keefe Duo at the Whiskey Jar. Metal Death, Death Metal, and more Death Metal from Fulton Park at Ix Art Park. Tanya Ray at the Whiskey Jar. On the 17th, Charlottesville's Beatles cover band Abbey Road plays Fridays after five. That's what that's supposed to be. Fridays after five at the Sprint Pavilion. Grenog. Pronunciation would be nice, guys. Grenog plays Irish Jigs and Reels at Grace Cranog. Estate Winery. Robert Jospe Trio at Glasshouse Winery. Dr. Levine and the Dreaded Blues Lady at the Rockfish Valley Community Center Lounge. Sam Colony Band debuts at Holly's Diner. On the... What? Oh, what up, Sam? Clinton says what up. On the 18th, Mouse Pierce and Lauren Oppenheimer at Albemarle Ciderworks. The Pollux at Knight's Gambit Vineyard. Evan Mook tinkles the ivories at Fellini's. That sounds a little dirty. Steveville Jazz Congregation at the Batesville Market. Coda Curl and friends at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books. Every Sunday, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot. Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Say that five times fast. Tango music with Miles Pierce and Betty Metcalf at the Bebedero. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. Onyx Manor at Rapture. Songwriter Night at the Local. That's Monday. Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero, baby. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Traditional session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. And every Wednesday, the Mike Krasinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Wednesday and Thursday, we got Josh Mayo's open mic night at 1221 Market Street. Bachata Fusion at the Rabbit Hole. Every Thursday, Humberto Sales and Vincent Zorn do Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero. And every Thursday, John Durth at Miller's. All right, that's your weekly offerings for this week. Not all, just some in this wonderful artistic town of ours. We're going to pay half a bill and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jason Burke of the Six Pack Songwriter Series. You're listening to 94.7 FM, Homegrown.
That was very entertaining.
34 minutes past the hour. I just love the way Jason says the name. I love it. Like the
homegrown.
Right? Like, reverb in it is awesome. And yes, Jason, that is a way of saying you need to come back on the show. Jeez. All right. And we are on to our second guest. Yay. Mm-hmm. Dropping Julia, Emily, Julia, Kresge, Nico. Okay, you're gonna help me. Have to help me with that.
Svetanovich.
Yeah. Woo.
Gotta say it with your hands.
Yeah, you have to put the hand motion in there to get it right. Yeah, yes. Exactly. And Sean Bracken, all musicians, you are having a release concert at Front Porch on the 18th for your new album.
Yeah, there's a lot going on that night, but you should come to see us.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, yeah, tell us about this new album.
Well, we recorded it in December at Minimum Wage Recording in Richmond, which was really fun. We did it in about 2 days, and they're all original tunes. There's 10 songs on there that... written by me and then written more by us together and produced and yeah, we're super stoked. It's the three of us doing the core of it. And then we have, three or four extra, guests playing on it. We have Gina Sobel. She plays flute and sax. She's awesome. Gina, right. You're awesome. We have Alex Bragg playing guitar, Chris Spies playing keys and organ and melodica. He added some melodica in there.
Wow.
And Jonathan Lingerfeld playing fiddle, and it's turned out really cool.
2 days to record 10 songs.
Yeah.
So basically you didn't sleep for 2 days.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah, we didn't. And also we played Fellini's that night. Like,
yeah. It's we try to do a lot of stuff, and we've been workshopping the songs for a long time, and so it's pretty, you know, we do it quick, and that's all we need.
Pretty dirty. Talking about trying to do a lot of stuff, how long have you guys been together as a group?
It was my year with Emily a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the first time I went out with them, I was going to fill in for another great bass player in town, Andrew Hollyfield, and they were going to the New Orleans Jazz Fest. And so he had just dropped out, and they were like, hey, do you want to come to New Orleans and, like, hang out for a week and play shows?
Oh, you're the same as New Orleans.
Yeah, I was there. So, it's been about a year for me and, what, like, 10 months for you?
Yeah,
it's
been
about
10 months for me. Yeah.
So isn't that a short time to
yes.
go from that to new CD?
But we
talk about
we
that.
Hang out. We spend like most of our time together, yeah, so yeah. It doesn't.
It's a lot of like it's a lot of traveling and playing. We've been going all across kind of this area and so yeah, it's just you know, it's we've kind of compressed it into mm-hmm. a short amount of time.
Yeah. So how much do you guys gig on a regular basis?
We try to do it at least once or twice a week, but sometimes it's 3-4 gigs a week. We play a lot up and down the East Coast.
Yeah, a lot of driving. We actually just got back
from DC
at 3:30 in the morning last night from DC, playing DC.
That's insane.
And we booked this first, so we knew what we were getting into. We're like, we have something at 9:45 in the morning.
Let's
do it.
We are not going to sleep. We'll just drive and then intravenously put the coffee in.
We've done worse. We one time drove to, we had a gig in Annapolis, Maryland, actually, on a Sunday night. So we all had work the next day on Monday, and that gig was over at like 1:30, I think. So we got back at 5:30 a.m. and then went to work. Sorry, bosses.
Hey, you know, that's what happens when you hire an artist. You know,
exactly.
That's what they were getting.
You know,
don't say that. That's not what happens when you should hire artists as much as you can. Pay them more than you pay other people and require them to work less.
Exactly.
It'll be great. It'll work out. No, don't worry at all about hiring artists.
But yeah, wasn't saying it as a negative.
Well.
Yeah.
We just love it. So
yeah.
We do a lot of it. You
exactly.
know?
You have to put in a lot of effort for it to be worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's something that a lot of people, especially aspiring artists, you know, especially, you know, teens coming up who like are getting into music, they see the on stage, they see the flash,
mm-hmm.
but they don't see the work that goes into it. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of misleading unless they actually know someone.
Yeah. It weeds people out too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I don't know, like,
oh yeah, real quick.
I had a lot of friends that were like all musician people, and then like they realized how much work it was, and they're mm-hmm. like, you know what, I'm cool with just playing guitar in my basement. You know?
I heard someone say once, I don't remember who it was, but like that you're meant to do not what you love, but what you're willing to suffer for.
Yes.
And that really resonated because like, it's so true. Like that will, you'll, the people who aren't willing to suffer for X, Y, or Z will get weaned out of whatever they're trying to do. And this is, I guess we're willing to suffer with very little sleep and driving long hours and not getting paid that much sometimes and, you know, eating in cars and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a musician friend of mine, and he's like, every overnight sensation is 20 years of work.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's
or lots
real.
Of money.
Either or.
So, you guys are going to play a song for us?
Well, I think
we have to pay a bill first.
We probably should pay, but let me ask a question first. So, the album's name is Wake Up.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what you were going for with this album? Is there a particular feel, a particular direction? Talk about the conceptualization of the album, and do you think you got there?
Well, it actually, it's kind of it's kind of like morphed itself, because when we went, we just changed our name to Dropping Julia and like created it. It was just me as like a singer-songwriter for a while with them just backing me up, and then we were kind of morphing it into the new band in December, January. And so when we went into the studio, I remember Lance, who recorded us, he was like, so, like, what are you going for? And we were like, well, we're kind of in an identity crisis, actually, so we don't really know. No. So it kind of, like, ended up morphing into
Mold
one of
us. Yeah.
Yeah. The album is kind of representative of that, though. It takes a little bit of all of our genres and inspirations and kind of melds it together. It starts off a little lighter, and then we definitely build it up and gets a little funky, a little gritty towards the end, and it's just a fun album. It just plays around with all the genres that really help define us.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd say good. Well said.
All right. Well, we're going to pay half a bill.
Cool.
And when we come back, you're going to play for us live.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's pay that bill, Clinton.
Hey, Charlottesville. This is Greg Brown, and you're listening to Homegrown 94.7.
43 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Homegrown, your show dedicated to local art here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are here with Emily Julia Kresge, Niko Svetanovic. Svetanovic. Got
really
it?
That was really close.
Svetanovic. Oh, God. And Sean Bracken from Dropping Julia.
They're going to slip his name in there
because it's easy.
Someone said Cian once, so it's not that easy.
So our dear Emila is going to drop some Julia on us.
I like that. Emila. That's what y'all have to call me now. So I'm going to play the title track, actually. It's called Wake Up.
Awesome.
From the album Wake Up. And I'm really sorry that these two are just going to be sitting here, because they actually are super awesome. And we usually play this with the full band, but I'm going to do a little stripped down version because that's how I wrote it. I actually wrote this one, I think, in 2014, but I lost it. I lost the lyrics and I never recorded it, so I forgot about it. And then maybe a year ago or something, I found it again. I was like, oh man, that was a good song. And then we worked it up. So it's called Wake Up. One night in my old place, met a lady with hands on still, and I asked her to stand straight. Her eyes a peanut for a bottle of rolling pills, so I got into her face. Little time to shake the spell against her will, and she pushed through the doorway. Left alone with an empty bottle of pills. There was a time when all the windows were clean. There was a time when forgiveness set you free. Wake up, don't be afraid to say goodbye. You've had enough, you're feeling down, now find which way is up. Wake up, please don't be afraid of your chance to say goodbye. Your chance to say goodbye. Took a walk in the night street, scratching a little bit to keep her quiet. Like she walked in her bare feet, kissing a stranger till he gave her back her flight. There was a time when all the windows were clean. There was a time when forgiveness set you free. Wake up, don't be afraid to say goodbye. You've had enough, you're feeling down, now find which way is up. Wake up, and please don't be afraid of your chance to say goodbye. Your chance to say goodbye. The world unseen is golden, dark, and mean, and one more time will shortly steal your mind. Wake up, don't be afraid to say goodbye. You've had enough, you're feeling down, now find which way is up. Wake up, please don't be afraid of your chance to say goodbye. Your chance to say goodbye. Your chance to say goodbye. Your chance to say goodbye.
Thank you.
All right, the title track from Dropping Julia's new album, Wake Up. That was awesome.
Thank you.
I love, 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 love your voice.
Thank you so much.
Like, it's got this really cool, I love the tone of it, and you're awesome.
Last night, actually, I got one of the weirdest things, weirdest pieces of advice is about my voice. Some guy really liked our sound, and he said, I sound like Amy Winehouse, but he was like, but you should try to sing with a British accent.
Excuse me? Like,
well,
I don't know.
Thanks for the input, boss.
Wow. Okay, so creeper, really walk away.
But it was coming from a good place.
If you can wear this wig too, just like, have well, you thought about heroin? Well,
yeah.
What am I?
Your little doll that you're dressing up for your fantasy right now? I don't think so.
Well, last time we were there, it was the same venue, same guy. He kept on being like, "Play more Amy Winehouse, play more Amy Winehouse." We're like, "We only know Valerie."
Did we play it?
So it's like a weird version of Freebird being yelled
yes.
at. That's okay.
I would play Valerie over Freebird.
It's like the female vocalist version of Freebird. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hear it across the bars in Charlottesville a lot.
That is true.
That's awesome. Okay, so we have working artists on the show. We like to kind of delve into like how you got to be a working artist, because that's something that not a lot of people talk about all the time. Like, you know, how do you go about getting gigs? Like, you know, how do you manage the business side of it? Or are you managing the business side of it? because that's something that a lot of artists like just have no clue about, because most of us are just not built that way. Talk about that a little bit. Like how do you manage all that? I mean, you were just in the recording studio for 2 days. Like, how did you pay for that?
It's a team effort for sure.
Yeah.
It takes a village. All of our family and friends are super supportive. Everyone wants to chip in and help us out. And,
we did like a GoFundMe thing that helped, but I feel like at least for us three, core three, we sort of like split the workload. Like she does a lot of the booking and stuff. You do a lot of the marketing, advertising. I'm like the sound guy for shows, you know, like, so it's like we all have our own little area of expertise, which is really good.
And they all kind of just fell into place too. It was never like, all right, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. We kind of just like found what we are good at. So we're like 100% self-managed at this point, and it doesn't feel like too much. I mean, on my downtime, that's like what I'm doing anyway, because it's just like how my brain works. So it doesn't really feel like work. But I would say because obviously like at one point I didn't play music and then I did. So that is an interesting thing. I think I started playing with a few people maybe 4 or 5 years ago that were already playing. So they kind of like took me under their wing and were like, okay, well, this is how you book a gig. Like, you send an email and you do this and this and this. And, you know, then over time when I got some either music samples or someone heard me live, then it was a little easier to be like, okay, this is what you can expect. But it is actually funny that we heard Jason Burke, because I remember specifically like sitting down with him when I was playing a little bit. I played maybe like five gigs, and I knew he did like the Six Pack Songwriter series, and he's a really great music person in town. And I remember seeing him at the local open mic, and I sat down with him outside, and I was like, okay, like, so what do I do? Like, what do I do? Like, how do I start to get gigs? Like, what do I do next? And he was like, all right, well, here's what you do. X, Y, Z, like, send this email and say this and this. So, you know, I feel like it's actually pretty cool about the music scene in Charlottesville is that people are very willing to, you know, help each other out and give pieces of advice and advocate for each other and stuff like that.
Well, so. And Jason's such a teddy bear. Like, I mean, he's like the sweetest person on the planet.
Exactly.
Like, he'd give somebody the shirt off his back.
So, being old as I am.
Oh boy, here we go.
Probably my first...
This is the part of the show where he talks about being old.
Yeah. Every time.
This is the time. Also, in Homegrown, we like to talk about how old I am. So, as a kid, I think my first exposure to this aspect of watching was watching the Blues Brothers.
Mm.
And there's that, you know, that great part of the Blues Brothers where they've booked a gig. or actually they haven't booked a gig, and they end up doing this gig in this country western bar,
right?
Which is completely inappropriate for the type of music that they do. They don't know any country western songs. They end up like, you know, they do the theme to Rawhide because they've seen the show, right?
Yeah.
So thinking about that, I want to ask, you were just, before the show, you were talking about this gig that you just did in D.C., and how is this cute little place and this neat, and I've always wondered, like, so how do you find places like that, and how do you determine, okay, this is a good venue for us, this isn't a good venue for us?
Trial and error,
that's been a lot of, I played a lot, I'm sure both of you too, and other bands have played a lot of really not fun gigs.
We've felt very unwelcome in places.
Oh, no!
But you also have to, and this is sometimes like my job on the thing, like on the day, is like, I have to figure out like, and we all sort of do it, but it's like, okay, what's the like the sound that they want? You kind of do have to play to the audience, and so, you know, there are some places who like want you to be really really quiet, and so we like, you know, turn everything down. We change the set list around, and I mean, you kind of have to just like go with the punches, almost. Yeah. You know.
But with this gig in particular, it was actually. An advocation, is that a word?
Yeah.
Advocation from another musician in D.C. So that's, like, I guess kind of how we've done it for cities we have never played in or have played in, you know, just once or twice, because we played a gig up in D.C. at the Vinyl Lounge, the little side room of Gypsy Sally's, and there was a band after us, and the keyboard player sat in with us, and then he then heard our sound, and then he was like, oh, I should hook you up with this venue, because you would work well there. So
it's a lot of musicians like helping each other out,
or hey, I need somebody to cover my gig. I can't make it. Can you guys drive up to Annapolis this Sunday? And we're like, well,
that
sure.
happens too. And we're the crazy ones that will say, okay,
absolutely, we'll do that.
As long as I fill up our gas tank and we sell a couple of CDs, we're good to go. So,
wow. Okay, so go ahead.
Did you have a question?
I did.
Okay.
Okay. He's like moving the mic away from me.
You look like you had that.
You're done.
Had that I'm going to wrap it up look. And I'm like, no, we've got a few more minutes.
I want to know is this your first full album that you've recorded? And have you done like EPs and stuff before this? Or this is like the first?
All separately.
As this group, this is our first.
Yep.
Our first album. Yeah. And anything that we've put out, we've had like a few, we've done a few like live videos and stuff, but this is our first like.
Yeah, and then you put out a solo album that we were kind of, at least when I kind of came in, we were sort of playing that solo album, and so now, but these are all songs that we've been working on together, and this is the first one.
Wow.
No EPs, we write into LPs.
I don't blame you, I see no use for it.
Yeah.
So we only have a couple minutes left, let me throw this question because you just set it up. So what's it been like working in a group in terms of your musical sound, being exposed to other people's musical influences and putting them in with yours? How has working with a group changed your musical
stuff? Good
question. Yeah. I think specifically with this band, we've all played in a number of different acts for a long time. I think the main thing about this one is that when somebody comes up with an idea, just embrace it, and we'll just try it once. If we don't like it, move on to the next thing. But listening to each other, caring about the overall outcome of each song, everyone is putting in 100% on each song. No one's dialing it back. No one's being like, okay, you take the wheel, and we'll just figure it out later. Everyone's sitting down. We have intense conversations sometimes, and we really go through, and we like, all right, well, why are we doing it like this? Should we do it like that? Have we even considered alternate options? And then we just really piecemeal it together.
And it being a trio too, there's three people's opinions that matter. You know, it's all three of us, and so, you know, there can, for the most part, I don't think we like disagree. It's a lot of like the times where we'll try something and it will be like, okay, that doesn't work. there was this one song that we like she had written and she had brought it. And I was just like, this isn't working. Like, I don't like it. And we like turned it into a bunch of different like styles of music. And we were like, what is going to work? And then finally it just came together.
after like 5 weeks of trying it.
Five weeks to us is like, that's a long time.
Yeah, I know.
It's like,
5 weeks, you guys could have another album.
Right.
Exactly. We already basically do.
I found out the a couple weeks ago that the Beatles did two albums a year, almost every year except for two.
Yep.
And so I came to them and I was like, guys, we have enough songs. Let's record another album. Like, I'm already done.
We're
ready.
Like, here
you go. Like, let's go. New one.
while it's hot. Right? For sure. Yeah.
You realize the Beatles did that after refusing to tour.
Yes, that's true. We can do it all.
You know what? We're gonna they're younger and... They've got caffeine to support them.
Yes, yeah.
They will make it work.
Yeah, yes. Both of us have our coffee cups.
We've got caffeine.
The Beatles had heroin.
That is true.
Yeah, but that wasn't until later, and it was only a couple of them.
Yeah, heroin's got...
Also, it's also not a stimulant, really.
I don't know what we do.
It just kind of makes you want to sit there like a blob. Yeah.
Heroin's a lot better now, guys.
Oh, my God. That is not advocating for anyone to take heroin, please. No emails to Clinton, everyone, because I will hear it.
No, you won't. I protect you guys from all the complaints that we get. And they just come and sit and build into a little ulcerous rock in my soul. That's all.
Oh,
man.
God. Oh, man. We should wrap it up. Oh, my God. Thank you guys for coming on the show and sharing your music with us. This was awesome. All right. The release concert on the 18th at Front Porch. Dropping Julia, the album is Wake Up. Where can people get it?
So we actually just got physical copies in the mail. So we're going to be selling those at all of our shows. But then we're going to have it up on Spotify and iTunes and YouTube and all the other
Bandcamp,
places.
SoundCloud.
Awesome.
Everywhere.
Thank you guys so much for coming on. This was awesome.
Thank you so much for having us. This is great.
And that's it for Homegrown. We'd like to thank our guests, A.D. Carson and John Conover. We also like to thank Emily Julia Kresge, Nikos Svetanovich.
Yes, that was great. Yeah, nailed it.
Sean Bracken of Dropping Julia. Our opening music is Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is Positive Collective. This is Dropping Julia playing behind you right now. We will catch you next week. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you, Clinton. I love you.
Be good to each other.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville.